Okay, yeah. Today I'll talk about like some recent work that I did on chiral anomaly when there is like disorder system. So to begin with, I'll introduce my collaborators who I did this work together. This is Jed, who was a postdoc in UMD, and now he's a professor at Rutgers. And this is Professor Jay Sao, who is my postdoc advisor or something. So yeah, I guess, so this is a CM condensed matter seminar. So I will not bother you about like talking about like normal like Weyl system and stuff, but I'll still briefly mention about the chiral anomaly in Weyl system. So this is a dispersion when there is a magnetic field on a Weyl system. So without the magnetic field, there probably would have been a linear dispersion here and here, right? And then when we turn on the magnetic field, let's say this is the z direction, then the eigenstates for like different kx and ky will mix to and form Landau levels with like Landau level index n, but they still disperse in the z direction. And these are n equals like minus one, minus two, n equals one, two. And these are all nice Landau levels, but the special one is the n equals zero Landau level here and here. And the special thing about this is they're chiral, right? So this is the two different chirality of the Weyl nodes and their Landau levels. So because of this chiral Landau level, the n equals zero Landau level, when there is an electric field parallel to the magnetic field, then in the high energy sense, there's something seemingly strange happens, which is in this left-handed node, left-handed chiral Landau level, it seems like there's like charges, we lost some charge. And in the opposite node, it seems like we have some excess charge. And this was first discussed in these Adler, Bell, Jacques papers in the 60s, like ABJ anomaly. But and of course, like even in the high energy, I mean in the high energy, like the theory should be anomaly free. So this is not like really pathological, it's just like what we call anomaly. But in condensed matter, we're even more fortunate that this doesn't even look like it doesn't seem like we even lost charge or we got excess charge at all. So because the chiral Landau level actually meets at the UV, which is at the band in the at the energy of the bandwidth, and it's the this phenomena is nothing but just like charge pumping from one node chirality to the other. This was explained beautifully by Nielsen and Nomia in the 80s. So nice. So there was this chiral anomaly, this anomaly stemming from high energy. And then even in the lattice model, there was some explanation about, like nice explanation about that. And now at 2010, I think starting from like 2014, in the Condensed Matter Society, we actually like discovered Weyl systems. So there were some prediction about this, the signature of chiral anomaly as the negative magnetoresistance, and like Son Spivak and other people predicted that due to this chiral anomaly, there will be like negative magnetoresistance. And after discovering these many Weyl materials like tantalum arsenide, tantalum phosphate, and zirconium tellurium-5, people actually measured, like after 1 or 2 years, that this negative magnetoresistance. You see that as you increase the magnetic field, like you get negative MR, like here, and like more seen more prominent over there, stuff like that. So now now the chiral anomaly is something that we also consider a lot in condensed matter system. And so the next question that we ask, and especially like me and my collaborators asked, is that if we're in the condensed matter system and we see this kind of phenomena, one thing that we cannot avoid, especially in the experiments, is disorder. Right? So the question is, so in this, starting from this nice picture, which is done by Nielsen and Namiya, do we need something more in the presence of disorder? Right? Is there something non-trivial or something not like directly connected to the Nielsen and Namiya mechanism that we need to explain or indicate the chiral anomaly in the disordered wild system? So that is the main question that I'm asking. Of course, if the answer is no, I will not be giving this talk. So the answer is yes. And in particular, we consider two cases. The first case is when the disorder is weak, but there are these non-perturbative effects of disorder, which we also call as like rare states or like resonances. And the second case is when this disorder is like stronger, that we are in the diffusive limit, and we cannot even talk about these kind of Landau levels or chiral Landau levels anymore. If we push this a little bit further, we can even talk about like the competition between like the disorder and the chiral anomaly. And we know that disorder is something continuous, and chiral anomaly is something topological. So if we have like small disorder, the chiral anomaly should not be affected. That's something that we know immediately. But also, another thing that we know is if we're on the other extreme, that when disorder is super strong, then like obviously chiral anomaly cannot be there. I mean, things will be like localized. So that's like one goal that we want to pursue. But actually, in this setting, we're not there yet, and we're in somewhere in the middle, where things doesn't like all Anderson localize, but still the disorder is quite strong, that the system is in the diffusive limit, or even the disorder is smaller, but we still have something non-perturbative effect there. And yeah.
So when you say disorder, do you include inter-body scattering?
No.
So only intra-body.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
The smooth disorder.
Yes, that's. I'm going to talk about that, but maybe I can't because you asked. So I'll talk about this a little bit more in detail before going into the main part. Okay. So the first case, when I said non-perturbative effects of disorder, this is some phi dispersion, which is, I'm going to explain this phi dispersion more in detail later, but this is something like you can consider as a mini zone. It's like a super folded mini zone dispersion. And without disorder, there will be like two. So this is with two quantum flux going through the system. So there will be two degenerate chiral lambda levels coming down like here. And because of the disorder, these are they're splitting. The degeneracy is broken, and so that's why there are two like very close, like almost degenerate but not degenerate lines here. The dispersion here. This is a perturbative effect of disorder. In contrast, this state was not present without disorder. So this is what we call the rare state, which I will also explain more in detail. And this one is totally non-perturbative. And so the first question is, okay, if we have these kind of non-perturbative states, will this destroy the chiral anomaly or not? To give a short answer to it, like with what when we consider one wild node, it won't kill the chiral anomaly. But with like in the more realistic case where there's two wild nodes, there will be some competition. There will be some compensation there, and like it will modify the chiral anomaly, like the strength of the anomaly. I'll talk about that in detail later. And the second case is the diffusive limit, which is strong disorder. This is the same phi dispersion with much more stronger disorder. And if we're away from the wild node, like the zero energy, then here, you can't even like see any structure, right? If you consider like the density of states, then the density of states won't have any structure as we tune this parameter phi. So we can't like even define chiral Landau level. It's even hard to define Landau level itself. So it's a little bit non-trivial to directly apply Nielsen and Nolan theory here. So to tackle this situation, we consider some Suzy disorder theory and find that due to the Chern-Simons term coming from the topological Weyl Hamiltonian, this leads to some non-zero level, average level velocity. And we also like numerically show that this you can actually numerically detect this quantity and like confirm that there's a chiral anomaly.
Stupid question. I thought you were in four dimensions, like 3 plus 1.
Yes.
Where's the Chern-Simons term? In what submanifold does the Chern-Simons term live?
So this is in a different. So the field is not like the real field. When you do the Suzy disorder theory, you actually introduce like another copy of variables. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, right? So the theory itself is not in like real space.
Isn't this some kind of omega to the zero sector?
It's not omega equals zero, but we're going to consider the zero mode approximation.
Okay.
So it's basically, you can think of it as zero theory as well. We will, in that zero mode, by zero mode, we mean that we will ignore all the spatial variance. Like
along one direction or all directions?
Along all directions.
Small question. So you said this rare state appears non-perturbatively. It's a non-perturbative effect of disorder. Shouldn't I expect that to happen also in the strong disorder limit?
Yes. Well, it's more like if your disorder is this strong, the rare state will sort of proliferate. But in current analytical theories that people consider, we can't really go beyond like interacting rare states. Like the very first paper by Hughes and others consider just like a single rare state. And I think there are some studies considering like a very limited number of rare states. But this in this case it will be like there will be very many. Okay, please ask me questions. You're already asking questions, but okay. So to start with, I'll introduce the toy model to make Weyl fermions. So in this work, I'll use both some numerical. It's basically a single particle diagonalization method, and also some field theoretical work. So the Hamiltonian will be a lattice Hamiltonian and a continuous Hamiltonian, and the continuous Hamiltonian is obviously it's just like V sigma dot k that everyone like people usually know. So I won't talk about that. But for the lattice Hamiltonian, this is just toy model. It consists with C dagger and C's are the fermion creation and annihilation operators. Sigmas are the spin. So there's this hopping. And there's this sigma. So this is like the spin orbit coupling term. And Vi here is the disorder, and M works as some sort of a mass term to tune the theory. And without disorder, where Vi is zero, can easily just diagonalize this Hamiltonian is a tight binding Hamiltonian, and tuning the parameter M, where m over 2t is between 1 and 3, or negative 1 and negative 3, there will be two while nils at these k points. And since this is, so without this order, this can be easily diagonalized. This is kz direction. And we see these two while nodes, the two chirality while nodes here, linearly dispersing. So to actually simulate what we wanted to do, we need three more ingredients. One is we have to include the magnetic field. So the magnetic field is included as a perilous phase. So this is, the magnetic field is assumed to be in z direction. And another thing is we impose boundary conditions on all three sides. So one thing that we want to not consider is the boundary effect. So we want to consider the bulk effect of the chiral anomaly. So for x and y direction, we impose periodic boundary conditions. And for the z direction, we impose this twisted boundary condition, where if we go by LZ, well, LZ is a system size, it will acquire this e to the I phi phase. This was the phi in the dispersion that I was showing, and I'm going to explain that a little bit more in the next slide. And for the disorder, for the reason that Tong asked, we want to have correlated disorder because we want to eliminate this internode scattering. So in momentum phase, Vk and V minus k will have this exponential factor. So when k naught, so the k naught is what we're tuning. So when k naught is infinite, then it's uncorrelated. And all k, I mean the scattering between like k and minus k are going to be the same for all k's. And if we have this k naught to be finite, then there'll be a cutoff of the scattering between the k and minus k states. But that's why how we are going to like eliminate internode while scattering, internode scatter. So I'll explain these two, the bottom two points a little bit more. So the phi dispersion, this is just something that can just plot in phi. So for the numerical diagonalization, everything is going to be in a cubic lattice of 20 cubed. So just basically diagonalizing 16,000 by 16,000, including the spin. And so this dispersion, this diagram is drawn by calculating the energy eigenstates with like different values of phi, which is the phase that you acquire when you go through the z direction. So this is when there's no disorder. You can just diagonalize 20 cube Hamiltonian, and this is the kz, right? And you can see there's this while node here and also here. And what we have in the phi dispersion, so this is a calculation with phi equals zero, is that all the states which were in the previous figure are all like smushed into this single column. And then you do the same calculation for another value of phi, then you just stack them up in a different column, so on and so forth. And then you can draw this diagram. And
does the position of the while nodes depend on phi?
No, it doesn't. So it seems like, so okay, in here, the phi equals zero, it seems like there's no zero energy, and it seems like the while nodes are here. But it's basically because of there are like 20 sites, right? We can only detect certain points in the Brillouin zone. So you can see that there is no zero energy state in this diagram. And by having this phi in the clean limit, it's the same as shifting this whole dispersion by like phi over LZ a little bit. So for example, for the pi, when the phi is equal to pi, the states are going to be exactly where in between these KZ values, right? So that's why there are these two wild nodes here. So these two wild nodes corresponds to like a wild node here slightly right to these two points, and another one slightly left to these two points. So those are the two wild nodes. So if we had like infinite system, infinite size, then they will like all appear at every size. But since we have finite number of like sites in the z direction, this is what we get. And as I said, like this phi parameter is nothing but just shifting the momentum, the crystal momentum, a little bit in the z direction. But this can we can use this as some separate parameter to draw the to like plot the energy dispersion when there is disorder, and when there is disorder, like it's not a good the momentum is not a good quantum number anymore. We cannot plot things in KZ, but still this phi is something that we can it's a parameter it's a legit parameter that we can plot the energy with, and it's also like continuously connected to like the crystal momentum as well. So in the following calculations, I'll mostly always have disorder. So I will draw this phi dispersion over and over again. Oh, and another thing, ingredient we're gonna use to plot this is going to be the localization length. This localization length is something which is strictly in the IPR sense, where you have this relation, there's this square there, making it not just one. So this is just a measure of like how the wave function is spread out. So even when the localization length is small, one disclaimer is you shouldn't think of it as like an exponentially localized state. It's just that no matter how like how it falls off, you always get some sort of number length in length dimension, right? This is what this number is. And this naturally follows from the diagonalization, so we can make it as a color plot to like see how much the states are localized. So now we turn on disorder, and especially in this figure we have uncorrelated disorder, meaning that k naught is infinity. Maybe I shouldn't have written equal, but this is when there's two flux quantum through the system, so things are doubly degenerate. And we can see that apart from the two wild nodes in the previous diagram, we see these chiral lambda levels, like this one for one chirality, positive chirality. This is from the negative chirality. And like, of course, the degeneracy is equal to the number of flux. So if we have four flux through the system, I believe these two are the same system, and there's going to be like four chiral lambda levels going up, and also four chiral lambda levels coming down. And of course, as I mentioned previously, the broken degeneracy is coming from disorder.
Is the energy averaged over disorder?
What is, sorry?
Is the energy averaged over
disorder? This is just one specific
instance of.
Yeah, one disorder realization. So now intervalley scattering. So Chong mentioned this. But I'll still like tell something about it. So when we increase the disorder strength, this looks pretty much random, right? And there will be like gap opening, like avoided crossings at almost every point. So I'm not sure if you can see all the yellow dispersions, but there are these small gaps due to disorder, and it basically kills the chiral Landau level, right? And this is not something that we want to study, because it's something that it kills the chiral anomaly not because of something something else. It just kills the wild node, right? So there's no chiral anomaly to start with, so we don't So we want to avoid this situation. That's why we had this K0 thing, K0 parameter. So this is the same, same parameters, but different disorder realization with this correlated disorder. So KF is the momentum measured from the gamma point to like one wild node. And when we set the K0 as that KF over 2 and generate one realization of this correlated disorder, it becomes something like this. So you can see that there are some still like gap openings left, but things are much better than this one, right? And in principle, we can decrease this K0 value. And if we have like KF over 10, then like we can see that the gap openings are mostly gone. And I believe this value of K0 will suppress the intervalley scattering by a factor of like exponential negative like 200 or something. So it suppresses the internal scattering significantly. And if we, in the case that we, when we want a single, I'm sorry, if we want to eliminate the internal value completely, then we can go to the single node limit and do calculations or simulations on that theory.
Is this supposed to be a sharp transition or some crossover?
Sharp transition from where to where?
Let's say we tune K0 from infinite to KF over 10.
Crossover. So I don't think there should be any sharp transition. I don't think so. Yeah. I'll talk about the single wild node simulation when it shows up. So that's like that was the explanation of like why we need like this phi parameter, and also why we need this correlation in the disorder. So now we're like all well equipped and we can go to the main story. So this is the first part when there is weak disorder and we have this non-perturbative effect. Oh, sorry. This non-perturbative rare state. And this is actually a simulation on a single wild node. You can see that there is only one chiral lambda level and not the one with the opposite chirality, which should be something like this. And so basically like how we do this calculation. So in lattice theories, we cannot avoid pairs of wild nodes because of fermion doubling. What we do here is we just shift one of the wild nodes to like relatively high energy and then concentrate on the low energy. So what we have here is basically have a K-dependent, KZ-dependent potential. For example, zero for when KZ is zero to pi, and then some finite value when it's pi to 2 pi. If we have that kind of local, non-local potential, then we basically shift or in other words, squish one of the wild nodes to high energy and high velocity, and it won't be like observable when we look at only the low energy sector and the low energy. That's how we do the single node simulation, and the non-local potential doesn't have to be exactly a step function in the KZ space, but how rapidly it changes will determine like which range, like the energy range, where the single node approximation will be valid. If it's like more smoothly changed, then there's going to be a smaller range in the energy where you can safely say that you're in the single node approximation. Okay.
Sorry, can you say a little bit more about this non-perturbative? So this is like some rare state?
Yes.
So why is it guaranteed to be there?
Why is it guaranteed to be there?
Yeah.
There's no guarantee. It's rare. But there's a probability. There is a non-zero probability to be there. And if you're in the thermodynamic limit, you'll probably get it.
Is there any reason why it's flat?
It's very localized.
Localized.
It's power law. Yeah, power law localized.
Okay.
Yeah. So actually, the next slide was about the rare region. So let me know if this is insufficient. Talk a little bit more. So what people call a rare region is there is going to be this. So throughout the system, there's this disorder strength, like typical disorder strength, what we here call WC, and that's really a typical typical disorder strength, which is like an average throughout the system. But locally, then there is a possibility, there's a non-zero possibility where the disorder is locally much stronger than WC. And this, because things are random, this is possible. I mean, unless you have a disorder profile, which is like a step function kind of thing. If it's a Gaussian, then you always have some probability where it's just large. And this is large disorder strength. And since, and of course, it's statistically rare. And this does not really come up in the perturbation, like disorder perturbation theory. So we have to consider it separately. I believe there is some, in the field theory part, there's some studies by Altland and others using instantons, though there are some debates on the results of that. I'll not talk about that. So yeah, there's a possibility of this there being this rare state. And if there is a rare state, I'm sorry, rare region, there can be a resonant bound state like residing in that rare region. And those have like, typically they have, no, sorry, they have power law, quasi-local wave functions, like wave function going like scaling as 1/r². And of course, and this is the result from coming from a system with single rare state. And so this is again something that we, so this is, yeah, this is with two nodes, and we, and for a certain disorder realization, we find this local, this low energy localized flat band states. And this is like one way we can identify the rare states there. Like doing the simulations, like we have to run a number of different disorder realization to get rare states in sufficiently low disorder strength.
When you take an average of the energy, like you can use the replica trick or something like that, right? If, instead of like using particular realizations of disorder, you could have, I don't know, like take the average over certain correlated disorder. Do you think you're going to see the same, or that average kills part of this?
You're talking about like analytical stuff.
Right.
When you're doing replica.
You can then simulate the resulting Hamiltonian, right? Or not Hamiltonian, but particular physical observable that you want, I guess.
But I think if you average everything out, I think you might not see it. Yeah, even in the analytic work, I sort of like heard from the author that they put it in by hand, basically. So if you average things out, I don't think you can see it.
So it's guaranteed to be low energy because you're averaging over a lot of
We're not averaging over things, but it shows up in the low energy where the density of states is small. Actually, so these kind of rare states contribute to the low energy density of states and gives a non-zero density of state when non-zero average in the density of states. That's what the existing study, like the numerical studies suggest. And I believe the factor is like exponential negative W squared over T squared, where T is the hopping and W is the strength, the disorder strength. So without these kind of rare states, people used to believe that there's like this phase transition between a semi-metal to diffusive metal. And some studies, including like done a large part by Jed, who was also a co-author of this paper, showed that because of that non-zero density of states, the phase transition doesn't happen, so it becomes a crossover, which is also, people say it as like a avoided phase transition or something like that. Yeah. So this is like one rare state. So this is actually the rare state here. But the only difference is this is two energy flux. The wave function here is when there's one magnetic flux. And this is a state which is projected in the XY plane. So it looks very localized. And if we plot this wave function in a bit like bent wave function and plot it as a function of distance from the maximum value, we see like in a log-log plot, we see a fairly nice power law dependence. So it's like the slope is actually negative 2.15. So sort of consistent with the theoretical, like the analytical prediction where it falls as 1 over r squared. Yeah. This also shows that this rare, so this is when there is magnetic field. So this also shows that when there is magnetic field, this rare state and the power law decay still sort of survives from the magnetic field. Okay. So we'll see. So now, do you have any more questions about rare states?
So suppose I don't have magnetic field. This rare state, is it still there? Or?
Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah, the point that I made before is it's still there when there's magnetic field.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Most of the studies were done without magnetic field rare states, mostly in the density of state sense. Okay, so I mentioned this before, but I'll emphasize once more that, okay, this is a single disorder realization of a single disorder realization diagonalization. And to get this, there's a chance of getting the rare state. So we have to run a number of diagonalization and try to find whether there's a rare state or not and pick those disorder realization and study those specific realizations. So, and we have to tune like this W value, because if this is too strong, then it'll be too many rare states. If the rare states are too proliferated, like it becomes much more meaningless. So, but if it's too small, then it's sort of impossible to find one in a limited time scale. So what we had is like 0.7 times the hopping. In that specific parameter, we had like out of like 10,000, we find like 5 of them or something like that. And it also depends on K0. So we pick them and we study them and see how it affects the chiral anomaly or the charge pumping in the Nielsen anomial case. So we can just see this, like one thing to see from this phi dispersion is the spectral flow. When there's a chiral level, there will be a non-zero spectral flow when you tune from 0 to 2 pi. Well, here, it's in the reverse way, but it doesn't really matter. So if you look at this, the lower band here, then it goes up. And without the rare state, it should have gone up here. Right? The same, the higher chiral lambda level will go up as well. But it seems like because of this rare state, there are gap openings at these two points. So this one, the spectral flow is not like quite as much as it used to be. But when we're considering the chiral anomaly or any possible experimental signatures of that, we need to consider like all the states near the Fermi level. So here, if you actually combine this rare state and this state together, the spectral flow is actually intact. It's not changed at all, right? Because there's one going here, and the second one is going up again. And for the second chiral Landau level, this one is going up. This one also goes up like this. It just like sort of like changes lane and then goes up again. So it seems like, okay, there's this, like the signature of chiral anomaly will not be affected by this single rare state. And we were fortunate enough to find a case where there are two rare states here. And it's the same story again. Like, if we include both of these states to the story, then the spectral flow is going to be the same. This one will change lane and go up. And for the upper one, it will go like this, and then go up like that. So like one conclusion which we can get from this single wild node rare state simulation is that the anomaly will not be like impacted by any number of rare states, regardless of the number of rare states, and also regardless of the strength of the magnetic field as well. Okay, now we'll go to the more realistic case when there's two wild nodes and see how the rare states will affect it. But here it's like one relation where there's this rare state here. And one disclaimer here is that, okay, as I said, the probability of getting the rare state is also dependent on the k-naught. And if you turn k-naught to a finite value, if you tune k-naught to a finite value, you get smaller probability to get the rare state. So sort of tried, but eventually failed to get a reasonable rare state with not a finite k-naught value. So this is with k-naught infinite. So this is uncorrelated disorder, and we found a rare state. And because of the uncorrelated disorder, there will be internal scattering, right? And that's why there are these avoided crossings. These come from the internal scattering. But what we want is the effect of the rare state to the chiral levels. So we'll see we'll just assume that, okay, the gap here is not open. Let's just like concentrate on like this region. Still, we can make some like reasonable conclusions from that. So these are from the intervalley scattering. And now these gap openings are from the rare state. Right? So the rare state, as I mentioned before, has power law decay, right? It's not exponential. It has power law decay. So in principle, it mixes with both the wild nodes, right? So even if there was no internode scattering, which kills these degenerate points, the rare state will mediate the interaction between the two wild nodes, or here, the two different chirality, like chiral Landau levels, and then open up the gap. Now, if you look at this band, there is no spectral flow at all. It's going to come down as original. So here, the chiral anomaly, you say that, okay, the chiral anomaly is eliminated by the rare state.
Is it fair to say that the chiral anomaly is eliminated because you just don't have any gapless modes?
Don't have.
These kind of never cross in some way. So, like, you don't have any cones like this anymore, right?
Okay, so that was the disclaimer that I was saying. So, you're saying that, okay, because of we don't have wild nodes anymore, it's not. So my point was that, okay, it was like the probability of getting a rare state is so small that I couldn't get a nice picture like the previous single node one. But let's assume that we can have like we have infinite time and we found one disorder realization there. Or maybe you can like tune disorder a little bit stronger, or you can tune some parameters to get a rare state when there's two wild nodes. When there are no direct internode scattering there, then these gaps will not be open. Like the other dispersion that I showed with like small k naught. And if there was this rare state in that dispersion, there will still be this gap opening because the rare state will interact with the chiral lambda, the chiral lambda levels, right? And just because of that, before considering internode scattering, just because of that, the spectral flow will be killed here. That was the point.
Is this gap like always there, or it's an artifact of the numerics in a finite system?
This gap?
Yeah.
This is always there. There's always going to be non-zero mixing between a power law wave function and some almost definite k.
If the rare state is power law localized, then why is it so insensitive to the magnetic field? Because you're saying it's like, delocalized enough to mediate vowel node interaction.
Yeah.
But then somehow it's not sensitive to the boundary condition, like phi.
Actually, so the magnetic field, the rare state and magnetic field is actually a separate topic which can be done, which is actually unknown until now. So as far as like me and our co-authors know, the figure that I showed like a couple of slides before was the first first rare state in magnetic field. And we were also quite surprised that the rare state and the power law nature of the rare state didn't change that much with the magnetic field. And that was like one magnetic flux quanta through the system. We actually increased that to like something like 10. And okay, it gets affected slowly, but not that much. So something that we actually don't know. Any other question?
So that gap is the rare
It's not exponentially small in anything, right? It's not exponentially small So it is a measure of like how the wave function overlap between a power law wave function and a sort of like plane wave like state.
Okay.
So
it doesn't depend on the probability for you to have it rare state. Once you have it, it's there.
Oh, once you have it, it's there, yeah. System size may affect it. That's like for a plane wave like and a localized state. So
shouldn't that vanish in the thermodynamic limit?
Yeah, it should be small. Yeah. But is it? It's not exponentially small, is it?
I mean, does it go to zero as L goes to infinite?
I would think so. At least one of them.
Sorry, one of them?
It's between different. Oh wait, sorry, that's not wrong.
I mean, if it's overlap between local
and both of them.
As long as we go to zero, the overlap.
Yes.
Zero, right?
Yes.
So you're saying in the thermodynamic limit, there should be no real gap or what?
In the thermodynamic limit, there is going to be a lot of rare states.
Oh.
That's actually a good point that we should be more careful of. But
then does that mean that the chiral anomaly survives in the thermodynamic limit, or it's killed in the thermodynamic limit?
It's what, right?
It survives.
So, okay. Well, just considering the effect, it should go as chiral anomaly surviving, but I should think about that more. But unfortunately, there is a mention of something about thermodynamic limit. I'm not sure if I should do it. Anyways, if we just like go on. This is when there's like two fluxes. So it's the same disorder relation as the previous slide, but this has like two fluxes. So you see that there's two copies of chiral lambda levels and then a single rare state. Now, as the one flux case, this one has no spectral flow. It goes down again. But this one still survives. Fine. So the conclusion here is that the number of rare states kills like one rare state kills one channel of the spectral flow. So it's in some sense it's weakened in a quantized way, since like rare state is non-perturbative, chiral anomaly is topological, so there's like numbers, you can subtract them, and then that's gonna be like the resulting effect. Actually the thermodynamic limit that I was trying to say was okay, the number of fluxes will scale as L squared, rare states L cubed, so unless you have a very thin sample, then the rare state will dominate. But let me think about that statement. So when did I start?
A little bit after one.
Okay. So now I'll go to the second situation where the disorder is large and we're at the diffusive limit, where probably in the third slide or something I said where's the chiral lambda level or anything over here, like apart, like higher from. So when there's a finite chemical potential, not when the chemical potential is here. I think Haldane called that as a topological middle or something. So here we use that the SUSY method on disorder system where we introduce like an extra copy of fermionic variables, and then the advantage you get from that is that you can do the disorder average exactly, but then you change a non-interacting disorder theory to an interacting non-disorder theory. Okay? And of course, there's like other methods like replica or Keldysh. Those three are the main method that people use. And also, I should mention that in this Outland and Bagrat's paper, they used the replica theory to at least get the similar Chern-Simons term. And since it's, I won't really go a lot into the details of the SUSY method. And it's eventually be quite useless to speak in a talk. And I also have like 10 minutes, so. But the main idea, the main thing that we're going to calculate is this level-level correlation function, where nu is the density of states. And you can express this in something like in the language of Green functions, where you have this advanced and retarded Green functions. And so this is all in the textbooks. But if you combine these GA, GA, or GR, GR terms, then you can easily do it in the usual sense of perturbation theory, but the hard thing is to get the GAGR, the cross terms, the GAGR and GRGA. And when you, you can calculate the GAGR correlation function from this path integral form where you introduce the supermatrix Q, and you get this sort of action where this STR is the supertrace, D is the diffusion constant, then you get something like this, A is the vector potential. And okay, so this result is in like the textbook and all the like the papers in the 80s and 90s. So this is when you have a Hamiltonian which is non-topological. You have a non-topological Hamiltonian, you get this. And when you have a topological Hamiltonian, something like a wild Hamiltonian of like plus minus V K dot sigma, and here we're also considering just one node case. Analytically, we're considering one node case. You'll get additional terms other than this nonlinear sigma model. You get some Stern-Simons term. You get some term contributing to the anomalous Hall theory, anomalous Hall, and several others. But when you do the zero-mode approximation, meaning by just like killing all the position dependence of Q over there, you're left with this term, which was originally written in like something like ADA type Stern-Simons term. But if you plug in all the vector potential in where there is like two types of vector potential. One vector potential comes from the external magnetic field, which we included in the pyrolysis phase. The other one comes from the twisted boundary condition, which in your imagination you can think of it as like a flux through a 3D torus. So there's these two contributions for the vector potential, and using the zero mode approximation you kill the del Q and you get this additional term which is proportional to lambda Q. I didn't explain what lambda is, but it's just an 8x8 matrix. It's not that important at this point. So one important observation here is in the zero mode approximation case, your topological action is the same as the non-topological action when you shift your omega by this amount. This is the only extra term, and it has the same. It comes in the front of this lambda Q, and which is multiplied by omega. So using that observation, and also you have this observation that in a non-topological Hamiltonian, your level velocity will always going to be there. Average level velocity will always be zero. That's something that we sort of know. So using that two facts, we can calculate this like average level velocity, and not showing all the details, but it is in the paper, and I'll be happy to talk about that afterwards. It's proportional to this factor, which was like almost directly what it was here, times the k time k, which is defined as the level correlator of the non-topological Hamiltonian. So using this, we can calculate analytically the average level velocity, where v phi is the velocity in the phi space, so it's ded phi, and this is quite the value of the level velocity is just the multiplication of the number of flux, just phi over h over e, times the average level spacing, which is nice. So this is something that we get analytically from the disorder Suzy theory. And just to mention, so this part, the second part, does not contain the rare state, which is, I also mentioned that it's hard or not exactly known to include in the analytical theory yet. Okay, so this is something, some value, some quantity that we got assuming a topological Hamiltonian, and we want to see the signature of this. So So we can, so from the numerical diagonalization, since it's an ED, it's not an ED, it's a single particle ED, we have all the eigenfunctions, so it's easy to find the V phi, which is D over D phi, using like just the Feynman-Hellman theorem. And just to give a schematic schematic view of how this average level velocity connects to the chiral anomaly or the spectral flow, this is, if we have this kind of band, which consists of all trivial bands, if we integrate the V phi's from 0 to 2 pi, each band will contribute as 0. Right? It's always going to be periodic for the trivial bands. But the chiral bands, so looks random, but this point is same here. These are the same. So if you integrate this V phi from 0 to 2 pi, you actually get like this delta E contributing from these four bands. And if you have this, on top of this chiral band, let's say you had a trivial band, and then you calculate the value for this, this integration of V phi for all these five bands, this won't change. No matter whether there is a gap opening or not, the integration of V phi will not change. And it doesn't even matter when there's two bands, two trivial bands, or if you have like n trivial bands. This thing will not change if you have a chiral band lying somewhere in the back. Right? So we can define some quantity like, which I wrote as f of v, where we integrate V phi over 0 to 2 pi, and for the states with energy lower than E, then in principle we should get something like this, where E naught will be like the bandwidth estimate for the chiral bands, and alpha will be like the number of chiral states. Yeah. So which is going to be the same as the number of flux you have in your system. So the final thing that I'll show is like a numerical check of this quantity. So this is where we have two wild nodes. So as I said before, the calculation was done for a single wild node, and a different chirality will contribute as a minus sign. So if you add them up, you get 0, which is useless in some sense. So here, this is a plot of f of e as a function of energy, which we scan from like bottom to like going up. It looks like it has something, but it's actually 0. It's just like because of the disorder and everything, finite size, you basically get 0. So what we want to do is we have like, okay, we go to the single node limit. Now you actually get a nice slope of 1. So this was when there's like one flux through the system in this strong, this sort of diffusive limit, then we recover this alpha equals 1 as E. So this was nice. And what we also wanted to claim is that having this non-zero average level of velocity does not only apply to the strong disorder limit, the diffusive limit. It's something that we got from the strong disorder calculation, but it's not limited to that. And it can be also applied to like clean systems. I mean, in clean system, it's much more natural to like imagine this will work, right? And also, we also check with the rare state, where in this dispersion that I showed before, when there's two magnetic flux, you can see from the two almost degenerate chiral lambda levels, and we see that there's a slope of 2 going up like this, or as a function of or f as a function of energy. So yeah, so we claim that this is something that we can say as like an indication of chiral lambda level. Even with disorder, not before everything gets Anderson localized or something. So yeah, I think that's pretty much, and thanks for listening.
questions, but I'll ask one for now. And then, so have you tried any of this in 1+1 dimension? Because then it would be much easier to simulate, and you won't have to deal with Landau levels. You would just have a chiral anomaly straight up.
Well, the short answer is we haven't.
Okay.
Yeah, at least for the rare state, I don't think you even have a rare state in 1+1D.
But can disorder localize in 1+1D? Pretty sure it can.
Isn't it always localized?
Sorry? Well, it may be. Well, we can discuss that, but I assume you should be able to get these rare states, but I'm not an expert. So.
Oh, I mean, I was talking about rare states.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Oh, I see. So you're saying maybe they won't be rare, so that's why it's...
I think all states are globalized.
What? Okay, I mean...
Not if you are chiral. Yeah. Exactly. Here, even when you have like one chiral copy, you still get all those power localized states.
Mm.
I don't think that's true in 1+1. You have chiral fermion. I don't think you get it.
Yes, so you're saying that the disorder will just be qualitatively different, so it won't be the same analysis.
That's my impression.
Yeah, perhaps, yeah. I have another question if no one has anything else to ask.
Yeah, go ahead.
So if you were to... So I don't know if I understood this notion of weakening the chiral anomaly,
mm-hmm.
but a related question that I may understand is this. Let's imagine you take, let's say, QED.
Okay.
So you gauge the U1 symmetry, and you put disorder in there. Are you effectively saying that the disorder shifts the theta term, or is that how Chong says no? So. Or you don't. You also say no.
Probably.
Sorry.
This is coming from the rare states that mix the two nodes. That means the rare state break the axial symmetry.
Okay.
So you can't gauge that one.
Okay. So this two loops are separate.
Okay, well, let's like you.